As Vancouver Canuck fans, we here at Pucked in the Head have been treated to some pretty decent rivalries over the past few years. The Vancouver Canucks and Chicago Blackhawks, well, that's always a show. The Vancouver Canucks and San Jose Sharks is pretty much going to be entertaining anytime they meet. And between the Stanley Cup Final last year and January 7th's free-for-all in Boston, the Bruins and Canucks, well, they really know how to entertain a hockey fan. Chris and I got together and we started thinking, what are some of the best rivalries in sport, not just in hockey? That's what we're going to talk about today. Pucked in the Head's top seven sports rivalries of all time. We're going to do two parts here because, gosh darn it, we want to give every one of these rivalries their due. And here we go. I love that music. I am Jason Carello. I am one of the hosts of Pucked in the Head. I'm here with my very good friend, Chris Withers.
Listen, it is good to be here again. We are here to talk about rivalry.
And this is fun. I'm looking forward to this today because I'm actually going to learn a little bit about some team rivalries and some sporting history that we just kind of take it for granted. I'm going to learn a little bit of detail here, I'm hoping.
Yeah, it's always nice to go outside the box a little bit. And, You know, some of these sports that we're going to talk about are ones that I do not watch on a regular basis, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we're going to take a little history lesson as well.
Well, and that's why I thought I would start with, and this is a rivalry that I brought up in the kind of the research phase for this podcast. And it's one that you might have heard about or you might have seen it in a movie or something, but unless you actually live on the banks of the Thames River, you might not even have ever seen it live or seen it. It's not on a sports cast here in North America. It's generally just known as the boat race. And this is between Oxford University and Cambridge University.
I knew that such a rivalry existed. I knew that it was longstanding. I know nothing really about the depth of the rivalry or...
Well, and the history of it is so deep and rich that over a quarter of a million people watched the event live last year. They crowded the banks of the Thames.
Really?
Yeah, like 300,000 people came from all over the world. I mean, mostly London, but came from all over the world to sit on the banks of the river and to cheer on these two teams. It's a rowing race once a year. It's two groups of eight rowing together against each other, one from Cambridge, one from Oxford, and it takes place on the River Thames. It's usually in the beginning of spring sometime, and it's been going on since 1856, every year except wartime.
Really?
1856.
155-year-old rivalry year.
Yes, and the first race was actually 1829. So it's almost 200 years old.
Huh.
But it's been annual, with the exception of the two world wars, annual since 1856. It's got an interesting history. I'm not going to get into too much of it, but it is interesting to note, first of all, these are amateur teams. They're not paid for it, although there is now a formal sponsor every year, of course, as there is with any event. They need to get advertising in there somewhere. Both teams are called Blues. There's a dark blue team and a light blue team. Leave it to England to not give them different colors. Cambridge wears light blue, and the Oxford team wears dark blue. In over 150 years of rowing, there are some personalities who have come out of it. But probably the one that most of us here in North America anyway would know is Hugh Laurie, who is known for playing Dr. House on American television. Of course, he was also in a lot of British productions and been in movies. Stuart Little, he's been on Blackadder and a lot of other television in England. He was a competitor in the race in 1980.
Really?
Yes, he was involved. His team lost. What a loser.
Sorry, was he Oxford or Cambridge?
That's a good question. You would ask me that, would you not? I do not have that answer. I believe he was Cambridge.
All right.
But I've got a 50-50 shot on that one.
You do?
Yes.
Well done. You can do basic maths.
Yes. Yes, I can. Nicely done with the S on there. The course is 6.8 kilometers long. It goes from Putney to Mortlach.
Of course it does.
Yes, it does. From Putney to Mortlach. The start is the Putney Bridge, and the finish is the Chiswick Bridge.
I would love to live in the UK just for the ridiculous names of the little towns and hamlets.
Some of the names of the things that they pass, this is actually a place called Black Buoy. Black Buoy Crabtree Tavern is actually marked on the race map. I don't think they actually stop for a beer at that point. But they pass through under Hammersmith Bridge. They go by the Chiswick Pier. The 2011 race went to Oxford, who won in a time of 17 minutes and 32 seconds. Currently, Cambridge leads 80 to 76.
Pretty even.
So there you go. There were unofficial wartime races as well, but they were not actually counted in the boat race statistics. In 1940, 43, 44, and 45, Cambridge and Oxford split those. But they had it at different places at that time because this was considered a bomb threat, so they didn't have the race
of course at
this location. So there you go. The boat race was my historic rivalry, which still goes on to this very day.
All right. Well, I am going to keep things in the United Kingdom.
Alrighty.
We are going to shift over to Scotland for a little bit and talk about the Old Firm, which is the Glasgow Derby between Celtic and Rangers.
You're going with Celtic, not Celtic.
I'm going with Celtic because that's how I've always pronounced it.
Right, because of North American basketball, of course.
Yes.
I'm going with Celtic because I have actually read books in my life.
Before, Jason, that you're a prick.
Thank you very much. I'm up for the Brad Marchand Award this year. The only thing is I don't know if my nose is large enough.
Don't worry.
So, sorry, it was Celtic and...
Celtic and Rangers.
And what cities are those based in?
They are in Glasgow, Scotland.
Both of them are in Glasgow.
Both of them are in Glasgow. It is the Glasgow Derby. Teams, since they started competing against each other in 1888, the first game for Celtic was against Rangers, duking it out right from the start. Have played a total of 397 football matches against one another. There is, I think, no other duopoly in professional sports.
I'm not sure that a duopoly exists. So I'll have to go and look that up.
Is it not?
I don't know.
If you can have a monopoly, you could have a duopoly.
Again, I have read many books in my day. I've never seen or heard the word duopoly before. But you know what? I'm going to give it to you because okay. I like you and you're a good-looking kid.
These two teams have been probably dominant in Scottish football.
Okay.
Have, between them, 96... Scottish Football League titles.
Wait a minute. You said that this started in 1888?
88.
That's not terribly much longer than 96 years.
No. Have 96 titles between them. Every other Scottish football team combined has 16.
Okay. So it's pretty much these two teams and... The Rabble.
Two teams. They meet four times a year in the Scottish Premier League. And utter insanity. Football stadiums in Scotland are no longer permitted to serve alcohol on their grounds because of a 1980 war on the pitch.
On the pitch?
Fans from both teams invaded the pitch and started massacring each other.
Were there actual deaths involved?
I think there were actual deaths in that one. It was pretty bad. Old Firm weekends, there is a 9-fold increase in admissions to hospital from violent assaults. It has been linked to increases in domestic violence, which is not
okay, that's
so awesome.
Not awesome. That's not awesome. Okay, let's get back to the sport part of it.
Yeah.
Do the teams hate each other? Because the Oxford and Cambridge guys that we talked about a minute ago, this is a gentleman's agreement. They put up there's a little show, they do a little ceremony, but I mean, these are Cambridge and Oxford, seniors.
The only thing that stops the teams from killing each other on the pitch is the fact that they want to win, they don't want to get sent off. There's hate on so many levels here. There's Tarian violence as well, or associated to the Catholics, whereas Rangers are more of a Protestant team. There are fans in Northern Ireland who come over to Scotland for the old firm and bring their religious extremism with them.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
I just wanted to throw this one other stat just to further emphasize how dominant these two teams are.
Mm.
The 122 years, if my math is correct, since these two teams started competing, only four times has neither of them failed to finish in the top two.
Wow. Why do other teams even join this league?
I honestly don't know. Runner up on the table of league championships, Midlothian, are with four. Compared to second place.
This is the current table right now, or is this in history?
No, this is in history. Yeah, second place, Celtic have 42 championships. Next, Hearts has four.
Yeah. So it goes like 54, 42, 4. Okay, well, there we go. Now, do we know when the next meeting between these two is?
We're going to pick things up again on March the 24th. Celtic will be playing away in Rangers Stadium. It will be the final meeting of the year between the two clubs. It is fantastic viewing, even if you're not a football fan.
All right. Well, it sounds very... Sounds very enthusiastic, these people.
I particularly like the ninefold increase in violent attacks.
Yeah, that's wow. Well, I have to say that if I think about Vancouver history, it seems that two out of three Stanley Cup finals, we get a riot.
We do not have moral high ground on which to stand.
Well, I do, because I was downtown and decided to get the hell out during the 94.
Yeah.
And I just said, I ain't going downtown in 2011, because I knew that the idiots were there. So I have moral high ground personally. But as we discussed earlier, I'm also a prick. All right. Well, thank you for that, sir.
Right.
Next up, moving into something a little more North American. And it's one of the major four sports. And I'm going to use Celtics, because nobody calls them the Celtics.
Right.
As opposed to the European version, who actually say it correctly.
You're doing it again.
I am doing it again. It's true. But that's okay. It's my podcast. I'm allowed to be pedantic if I want to be.
Oh, it's yours now.
What? Is it not yours?
Go ahead.
There we go. Okay, so of course we're talking about the Boston Celtics and the LA Lakers. These guys in basketball have combined to win more than half of all NBA championships in history. Now, of course, it isn't the 96-4 that we just heard about in the Scottish League, but this is also not the Scottish League.
This is the
National Basketball Association with the best players in the world.
Right, yeah.
And the Boston Celtics have won 17 championships. The LA Lakers / Minneapolis Lakers have won 33 championships in 65 years.
Right.
They have met in the final 12 times.
Yeah, remember to take your monocle off.
12. They've met 12 times in the final. The Celtics have pretty much manhandled the Lakers over the years. They won in 1959, 1962, 63, 65, 66, 68, and 69. During the 60s, by the way, the Celtics won 8 consecutive NBA titles.
That's a record, is it not, in
that
North American sport?
That is a record in major North American sports. Yeah. For 8 consecutive titles, they beat the Lakers 6 of those times. So it must have been pretty frustrating to be a Laker fan.
Yeah. Spread out that there was, they at least got some breathing time. But
62, 63, 65, 66, 68, and 69.
Okay, so not so much with the spread out.
Okay, the next one was 1984. But yeah, it wasn't until 1985 that the Lakers finally beat the Celtics. They won a bunch of other championships, of course, but it wasn't until 85 that they managed to beat the Celtics that they knew, okay, it can be done. Of course, for me, the rivalry that I remember, and it's one that we will probably talk about in a future podcast when we talk about individual rivalries as opposed to team rivalries, is Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson. Yeah. I mean, this defined the league for a decade.
It was a little bit before I started to take an interest in basketball. Watching documentaries of that time and some of the replays is characteristic, I think, for Bird to hate someone that much. He seemed like a genuinely nice guy, except where Magic Johnson and the Lakers were concerned.
Yep. And you could say the same thing about Magic Johnson. I mean, he's a fairly affable guy, but man, did he want to beat the Celtics.
I remember there was a image of Larry Bird being pissed off at the Lakers over something. So he takes the ball, shoots a three-pointer, the follow-through. Three-pointer is good. Just call a timeout. Bird walks to the bench and sits down with his arm still in the air following the follow-through just to taunt the Lakers. I mean, that kind of trash talk from a white boy still doesn't happen in the league.
Well, and you must admit, that's not even trash talk.
Okay, that kind of taunting.
So would that be the basketball equivalent of Brad Marchand wiping his hands after a scrap in the Stanley Cup final as he skates by the Canuck bench?
Yeah.
Is that the same kind of thing?
Yeah.
Or was it Sean Thornton who did the belt thing?
I can't remember who did the belt. It would be kind of like, I can't remember who it was just a couple of weeks ago who made bang, bang, bang gestures at Vinny LeCavalier after he potted a goal.
Yeah, I mean, this is Larry Bird. Nobody thinks of Larry Bird as being a trash talker, as a player, as a coach, anything. And now everyone just thinks of Magic Johnson as being, you know, like that smile, yeah. Magic Johnson smile. That's all you think about. You don't even think about his baby hook.
And it's just, it's funny to me how those two teams have been step for so much of their history.
Well, and I'll go into that a little bit because the NBA started in 1950. Okay. Before that, there were other leagues, but they were kind of loose but the NBA itself, the first championship was won by the Minneapolis Lakers, and they had the first dynasty. They won a lot in the 50s. They had the first superstar in George McCann, which a lot of people don't even, I mean, not as not a basketball fan, I don't know a lot about him, right? But he was the first marketable superstar, where the Celtics started to come in the mid-50s after Minneapolis had won a few championships, and they had Bob Cousy. The Celtics took over in the late 50s. But it was in the 60s when we started to get like some serious superstars. It was Bill Russell versus Jerry West. And this was massive. This is like what we would talk about if we looked at, say, LeBron James versus Kobe Bryant, for example. And then later on, the Lakers got Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, come on. And then, of course, in the 70s, you see the Celtics get Larry Bird. And in the late 70s, and Magic Johnson comes to the Lakers. And throughout the 80s, that was it. That was any time those two met. It's a lot like in hockey. Sidney Crosby versus Alex Ovechkin, the whole league stops to watch.
Yeah.
And that's what this was. And of course, they had great supporting cast, but that's what everyone remembers.
Right.
Bird and Magic. Didn't really happen, not a lot happened in the 90s, but they started to come back in the 2000s.
Yeah, you know, Boston decided that they were going to really gear up and be competitive again. They picked up Garnett. They picked up Shaq for a bit.
Had Shaq for a bit, although he was not really a major part of the rivalry, right? But, I mean, you've got Kobe is going to be the guy that you key on no matter who you are. But when you're Boston, everyone expects you to get somebody to counter Kobe in case you meet them in the final. So Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen.
Paul Pierce, yep.
This is now it's a legitimate rivalry again.
Yes.
And they've met twice recently in the final, in 2008 and 2010. They didn't meet at all during the 90s. So between 1987 and 2008, they didn't meet. But they met again in the final in 2008. The Celtics won. And then, of course, 2 years ago in 2010, the Lakers won in a very dramatic seven-game series.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully for basketball, if you're a basketball fan, shortened season, you got to hope that you see something like that again. If you are a sane human being, you hope that Miami just blows up and the Big Three doesn't get anywhere close to a final.
You hope so. Or that they get there and, you know, they lose to another team like they did last year.
Sure. Like I said, we've got a legitimate rivalry born again. Celtics, Lakers, one of the best rivalries of all time.
We're going to move on now. We're going to talk a little college football.
College football?
College football.
College football.
Frankly, I am not a fan of college football. I really, really detest the fact that there are teams that play Division I football that cannot win the national championship.
Cannot because of the way that rankings are?
Because of the way that the rankings are, because there is no playoff system. If your schedule is not strong enough, there is no chance that you can become the national champion.
Unless you actually switch into another conference somehow, which is very difficult to do.
Yes. So this was entirely new to me, but we're going to talk a little bit about Army and Navy.
I was surprised you volunteered to do this one. This was my, I brought it up and I said, hey, why don't we talk about Army-Navy?
Well, I thought we should both take one that was, really obscure, obscure to us anyways. And so you took Cambridge and Oxford and I volunteered for this one.
Okay.
So this has been played annually since 1930, so 82 years. It is traditionally, the Army-Navy game is the last regular season college football game of the year. So it's played in December.
Can I just ask a question here?
Yeah.
Now it's college football, right?
Yes.
So who is Army? What college is that?
This is the United States Military Academy.
So it's West Point.
Yes.
Which, of course, is the number one military academy in, or is it the only military academy?
I think it might be the only.
Because when somebody says they went to West Point, that's a big deal.
Yes. Yeah, I think West Point is for officer training.
Okay, so this is officer training in the Army, literally the Army. And so is the other one the Naval Academy? The
United States Naval Academy at Annapolis, Maryland.
So we're looking at not only collegiate brains in these players, supposedly.
Yeah.
But we're also looking at
military brawn. Yeah.
So is it a tactical game every year? Or is it a strategic game, or do they just beat the crap out of each other?
I don't know. I suspect that you'll get a little of each, depending on who the coach is, depending on what the players are. Navy holds the edge, 56, 49, and 7.
Even though it's held on the ground and not in the water.
Yes. Well done.
Because Army has home turf.
It is traditionally actually played at a neutral site.
I simply meant earth. Is the Army's
right
area of battle where the Navy...
The Navy actually does not usually swim nor walk on water. So I think playing on terra firma is not advantageous to either side.
All right. So it's not like the Navy guys are, playing in Aqualungs or something.
No. The Army-Navy game is, it's a big deal down there. And it has, the participants of this game and the broadcasters have pioneered a couple of things. The first ever football helmet was donned in 1893 in an Army-Navy game.
So this would be like the Leatherheads helmet, I imagine.
Yeah, it was just one guy that wore a helmet in the 1893 version of the Army-Navy game. It was Navy midshipman and later Admiral Joseph Reeves, who had been advised by his physician that if he received one more kick to the head, he would suffer instant insanity and possibly death.
Now, wait a minute. One more kick?
One more
to the head?
To the head.
Kick.
Kick.
anywhere in that particular article that you are referring to, where you did your research, does it say whether or not the kicks came during the football games? Or was that...
I am assuming that they happened during the football games. The game, the sport has evolved, Jason.
Or were those sustained during his Navy training?
That is entirely possible.
During combat training.
But nevertheless, he was required to wear this helmet by his physician, and so...
So this could, it could potentially be one of the first documented cases of a doctor recommending that an athlete take steps to protect himself against concussion.
Probably, yeah.
Alrighty then.
Also of note, the Army-Navy rivalry featured the first usage of instant replay as it is presently used.
Of televised.
Televised instant replay. Instant replay. Yeah, 1963.
Okay. Interesting. So that was done during a college football game.
Yes.
And not during the Olympics, not during a professional game of any kind.
College football game. Apparently, there were technical hitches, and so the only replay that they were able to broadcast was the winning touchdown by Army. The commentator advised the viewers during the replay, "Ladies and gentlemen, Army did not score again."
If you've never seen an instant replay before,
it would be confusing.
It would be confusing.
And it can be confusing, even if you
and
have
even
seen
now,
it, right?
Even now, if I'm not watching the game carefully, I turn around and go, "Did they score again?"
Yeah.
And I actually make that noise. Ah. Especially when the Toronto Sports Network replays Dion Phaneuf's goal 87 times during a 10-minute sports highlight package,
yeah,
but only briefly show the score of the Canucks game.
Right. Back to the Army-Navy game.
I'm sorry. Yes, I get distracted easily.
It is described as a friendly rivalry, but they do really dislike each other, or at least they have a very intense rivalry. Also, some great traditions. After the game, the teams line up.
And kick each other in the head, apparently.
Similar to international hockey. Yeah, they line up, and the songs of each university are played. There is also a tradition of doing a prisoner exchange prior to the game. When you're studying at either the U.S. Military Academy or the Naval Academy, you have to spend a semester studying at the other two academies, the Naval Academy and the Air Force Academy. So it is traditional that the prisoners or the students that are studying at the alternate academy are exchanged so that they can watch the game with their Army or Navy buddies.
All right.
And then go back after the game. I also found it amusing that in the Navy weight room, all of the weights are stamped "Beat Army." That's how ingrained it is. They are training their whole season not to win a national championship, not to win a bowl game.
Or win a war.
Or even win a war, they are training to beat Army.
You know, that's kind of funny because one thing I didn't mention when we talked about the Los Angeles and Boston basketball rivalry was there was a chant that Boston fans use whenever an LA-based team plays in the home venue. It actually started at Boston Garden in 1982 when the Philadelphia 76ers were winning the game against Boston. They were going to knock Boston out of the playoffs. So the Boston fans serenaded the Philadelphia 76ers as they won and left the arena by chanting, "Beat LA, beat LA."
That's awesome.
Isn't that awesome? So in 2011, Celtic forward Kevin Garnett actually released a shoe through his sponsor company called the Beat LA Green Shoe. And on the numbers, or on the tongue of the shoe, it features the all-time record between the Celtics and the Lakers.
That's great.
152 to 120. And so that's the all-time record because the Celtics are 32 games up in the series.
Excellent.
Yeah, isn't that great? So that's very similar to the Beat LA thing that they've got going on in Boston. I wonder if that's been taken up in other sports. Like if you would actually hear fans at the Red Sox game chanting that if it's an interleague game against the Dodgers or...
Well, you definitely hear it in other venues in the NBA. There are lots of lit buildings now. Usually, when LA is in town, they'll chant Beat LA.
Which makes sense.
Right.
Like we talked about earlier, I mean, if you've got a team that wins, and I mean, Kobe Bryant and the Lakers have won a lot, everybody hates them.
Right.
Unless you're a Laker fan.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody else hates them. So, yeah, it makes sense. I'm just wondering if, for example, the LA Kings go in and play the Bruins, do the fans chant Beat LA?
Oh, probably.
I kind of like it.
Anyways, we are talking a lot, as we so often do.
Well, it is a podcast where we get together in order to talk.
Right.
That would be the purpose of us getting together.
But since we are talking so much...
Well, as we said at the beginning, it's a two-parter.
I think it should be a two-parter, yeah. So,
do you have anything left? Do you have any final words about the Army-Navy game?
No, not really. From someone who's not particularly familiar with it, that's the best I can do.
Now, I do have a question. Is the famous image of win one for the Gipper, is that from Army-Navy?
Good question.
Is in your research, did you come across any pop culture references? Certainly, the Army-Navy game was very prominently featured in a lot of TV shows. For example, MASH, which took place, the story of it took place during the Korean War in the early 50s. It's been mentioned in many movies over the years.
That's a good question, Jason. No, the Gipper was George Gipp, who played for Notre Dame.
Oh, right.
On his hospital bed is purported to have delivered the famous line, "Win just one for the Gipper."
Before he died.
Before he died, and that was to Notre Dame head coach Knute Rockne.
Right. By the way, two awesome names right there. Gipp and Newt. Who would name their kid Newt? With, by the way, a silent K.
Yeah.
That's an awesome name.
Much better than naming your kid after a rodent, as Mr. and Mrs. Gingrich did.
N-E-W-T.
Yeah.
Or naming your kid Rat, like Mr. and Mrs. Marchand.
You know what, Jason? I stand corrected. There was a link here.
To the Army-Navy?
Not to the Army-Navy, but just to Army. Rockne used the story, along with that deathbed line, to rally his team, Notre Dame, to an underdog victory over Army.
So that's the connection that I had.
That was in 1928, and Army was undefeated at that time, so it was quite an upset.
Right. Okay. Well, there we go. So thank you very much, Chris. As I was hoping, got a little bit of learning in there. We're going to come back very soon and talk about a couple of other rivalries, including two in our favorite sport.
Yeah.
Of course, being Team Badminton.
Looking forward to it. Let me speak plain. I've got to sit and wait for my mouth to catch up to my brain. Time is spinning clockwise down the drain. Come back to me soon, because I'll soon be out of range. I'm feeling able as Cain. I only take these for pain. Broke out of rehab just like a happy nap put by Mark Twain. Don't you worry, see you back here again. I don't mean to complain.
some construction crane and I'm tearing. I'm tearing up the rules to the game. Now the moon's on the wane, I'm feeling slightly more sane. I'm riding shotgun with my stuntman and we're ready for fame. But I'm losing, my grip on the reins. It's all too so strange time for a change. Time for a change. Time for a change. Change. Time for a change. It's all too normal now, and once it seems so strange.
Coosie? Cowsie? Coosie?
You got me. Just cough and obscure it.
Bob Coosie. Ha! Awesome! I'm going to have to edit the crap out of this.